This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 17th of September, 2021. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Peter Walker.
Hello.
And Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
Anne Brew, Jane Thomas and Sue Frayne have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please ring the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure that it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Proposal for new nature reserve. Changes to city parking plans. And speed cameras set for busy motorway stretch. And the first headline story, Tony's.
Proposal for new nature reserve. A campaign has been launched for a new nature reserve at a soon-to-be-vacated military base near Winchester. Local people are concerned that open space at Sir John Moore's barracks could be developed once the Army Training Regiment departs, expected by 2024. Littleton and Harestock Parish Council is proposing a 25-hectare reserve in the northern section of the barracks at Flowerdown. It is in discussion with the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, over its plans for the future of the barracks, which opened in the mid-1980s. Proposals have included a variety of housing, a business park, community facilities and park and ride. The Parish Council wants to protect and enhance the biodiversity of the northern area, which is home to a wide array of flora and fauna, including hedgehogs, rare butterflies, fireflies, slowworms, glowworms, deer, owls, bats, dormice and many other species. It argues that new local nature reserve would play an important role in the future of North Winchester, with thousands of homes earmarked, including 2,000 at Badger Farm, also known as King's Barton. Flowerdown was a top-secret listening base during World War II, feeding information to the codebreakers at Bletchley Park. Plans for an integrated heritage trail within the site are also in discussion. The reserve idea is backed by MP Steve Brine and Debbie Tan, Chief Executive of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Mr. Brine said, "We are all rightly focused on the climate emergency and the need to protect and enhance local ecosystems. This environmentally rich land to the north of Flowerdown is so important, and creating a local nature reserve here would help protect endangered species, enhance biodiversity, and provide a space for health and well-being, now and for future generations. I can't think of a better project to go hand in hand with the proposed development. And its happening is, in my opinion, a critical component in the City Council taking and the community with it as the MOD departs Sir John Moore's barracks. George Sallis, chairman of the Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, told the Chronicle, "I am encouraged by the discussions thus far with the DIO, Major Disposal Division, who clearly understand and need long-term benefits and community feeling to make this local nature reserve happen. We know that the 25 hectares outside the security fence in the north of the site is extremely important environmentally and historically, and would be of huge benefit to the area now and in the future. We are not in principle opposed to the legitimate 40 hectares of brownfield development, or to the planned park and ride, if it is moved to a more suitable location outside of the countryside space." Ms. Tan, in a letter to the DIO, said, "COVID-19 has made many of us recognise the importance of creating space for nature close to where people live." Ms. Tan added, "Evidence demonstrates the importance of green and natural spaces for physical and mental well-being and for the future health and vitality of our communities. We believe that this local nature reserve could provide essential connection to wild and green space, contributing to improving health and well-being of local people."
Changes to city parking plans. Pressure from residents has prompted changes to a council programme over parking. The City Council has altered its plans after people lobbied a senior councillor over how parking problems were affecting their lives. They raised chronic problems in Highcliffe and the King's School area at the Decision Day meeting of Councillor Martin Todd, the Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery. In Highcliffe, householders in St Leonard's Road said a new parking permit scheme needs altering. Resident Conrad Haig said that there was insufficient room in the road for residents' cars, yet they were unable to park in nearby Dell Road, which always has plenty of room. It is, however, in a different parking zone. Mr Haig told Councillor Todd, "St Leonard's Road has 21 spaces for 25 residents. There is a development of 4 more houses at the end of the road. Dell Road has 26 spaces for 12 residents, and most have off-road driveways. This is a major issue for us. The permit zone is inadequate, and we need access to Dell Road, which is never busy. Residents can park on nearby Fivefields Road, but it is poorly lit and relatively secluded, and recently a Mini was severely vandalised and almost written off," the meeting heard. The local ward councillor, Linda Murphy, supported the residents and said that the parking near to Corners was also hampering buses serving the Highcliffe estate. Other local people raised parking issues in other parts of the city. Peter Mills of Marnhull Rise off Chilbolton Avenue spoke of inconsiderate parking, blocking access to driveways and potentially impeding emergency vehicles. It was being used by contractors on building schemes on Chilbolton Avenue and people wanting to access the city centre. County Councillor Jackie Porter raised the issue of parking in Court Road, Kingsworthy, which is becoming a commuter parking area. Parking is also an issue on The Crease in Mitcheldever, she told Councillor Todd. Councillor Todd agreed to review the St Leonard's Road scheme and also look at Marnhull Road's and other roads near to the King's School, where similar problems are occurring, such as Sarum View and Nightingale Close. St Leonard's Road had been among the last relatively central roads not to have residents-only parking. These restrictions were introduced about 50 years ago in parts of Hyde and were extended to large parts of the city such as Highcliffe and Fulflood in the 1990s. More recently, restrictions have been extended to Winnall and Stanmore. Councillor Todd mentioned that the closure of the square to through traffic had been the only COVID emergency measure to allow social distancing to be retained across Hampshire. The closure of Hyde Street was lifted after a public outcry.
Speed cameras set for busy motorway stretch. Average speed cameras limiting traffic to 50 miles an hour are being installed on a stretch of Hampshire motorway as it is transformed into a controversial smart motorway. National Highways, formerly Highways England, has confirmed that average speed cameras are being installed on the M3 between Winchester and Southampton as they prepare to start work on a multi-million pound upgrade. The speed will be limited to 50 miles an hour initially, said the organisation, while work starts to upgrade the M3 between Junction 9, Winchester A34 interchange, and Junction 14, M27 Southampton interchange, to an all-lane running smart motorway. The work is set to cost £139 million and it is believed work will finish in 2023 to 2024. The scheme will link to the forthcoming smart motorway on the M27. The cameras will be located between junctions 9 and 14 in both directions this autumn. The cameras will only be switched on once work has begun on the upgrades and are in place to ensure the safety of those working on the motorway. National Highways will be sharing detailed plans for the M3 junction 9 to 14 motorway upgrade during a number of public information events next month, for which they are currently preparing. Once the organisation has full details of the events, information will be published on how people can get involved and find out more about the work. The news comes after it was revealed that the M27 smart motorway scheme had been delayed by a further 8 months. And that concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices and Tony will follow with Christian comment. Chamberlain, Andrea Joy, née Fry, on the 8th of September, aged 78. Fennell, Lorna. Lorna passed away peacefully on Thursday, the 2nd of September, 2021, at Hampton Lodge Care Home, aged 94 years. Jennifer, Jenny, Gray, sadly passed away on the 7th of September after a very long illness, bravely borne. Haviland, Evelyn Rosemary Eleanor Hope, passed away peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday, the 30th of August, 2021, aged 95 years. Hewlett, Josephine, Joe, Mary Cromwell, died 4th of September after a short illness. Mears, Michael, Mick. Husband to Yvonne, father to Denise, Pete, Kate and David. Scrace, Gordon Henry, passed away suddenly at home on the 14th of August 2021, aged 88 years. Setatree, Carol Ann, died peacefully at St Catherine's View Care Home on the 4th of September 2021, aged 76 years. Table, Gwen, died peacefully in hospital on Tuesday, the 7th of September, 2021, aged 83. Nigel Hemming is the contributor of this week's Christian comment. It is headed The Way of Jesus. Thank you, Tony.
As summer turns to autumn and society gradually unlocks, many are only just beginning to feel the full effects of the disruption of the past 18 months. Even for those who've managed to rest over the summer, the impact of COVID on our way of life still looms large. Settling into a new season, many of us still need time to reflect on and process the very real losses associated with the pandemic. Some are feeling the impact of physical or mental health, or the very real loss of family or close friends. For others, this season has meant increased emotional stress and strain, employment or economic uncertainties, isolation or loneliness. The words of Jesus can provide some comfort. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30, Message Translation. Jesus was a non-anxious presence in a culture which was busy and stressful, and he still is. In his time, religion was generally known to add to people's burdens rather than relieve them. The crowds flocked to get close to him to hear his refreshing stories about God and observe his incredible miracles. His invitation to simply come and be with me was profound then and is perhaps even more so today. Over the centuries, many have chosen his further invitation to walk with and work with him, learning a transformational way of living. Jesus' followers joined an alternative community modelled on his teachings and worked out in the nitty-gritty of everyday life together. The aim was and still is to become people who live out the values that he modelled, a lifestyle of love and selflessness that stands in contrast to today's consumer society. This kind of apprenticeship is not a quick fix, a political philosophy, or a self-improvement scheme. The way of Jesus can only be learned over time, walking together with other like-minded students or disciples. This is a lifelong spiritual formation journey. Reimagining what post-lockdown church looks like presents a fabulous opportunity to properly reset our priorities, habits, and practices. Where we may have taken our eye off the ball or taken our freedoms for granted, lockdown has focused us to think about what really matters. It's an opportunity for believers to bring our lives even more into line with the teachings and the way of Jesus, which we read about in the Gospels, and to really dream about what kind of alternative society Christian communities should aim to be. I, for one, find that a really exciting challenge. How about you? And that's from Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. As usual, there's quite a range of subjects in the letters to the editor this week. We have a dozen or so for you. Peter will start us off with complacent.
Thank you very much. This is from Andrew Beadle. Sir, your report, Prepare for More Flooding, in the Chronicle of September the 9th, seemed to show a rather complacent attitude on the part of Hampshire County Council. Councillor Humby is quoted as saying that the highways drainage system in Winchester has been functioning properly last year, but was overloaded due to the volume of rainfall in a short space of time. But how could it have been functioning properly when the investigation also found that some drains were blocked? It is possible that the flooding would not have happened on the scale that it did, had all the drains been regularly cleared. However, what we do know is that we do need to prepare for more extreme weather events like this in years ahead. Steve Brine MP, in his recent Green Winchester survey, includes flooding as an issue and praises the County Council for its strong leadership and good track record in accessing government funds to help improve the environment. I trust, therefore, the Council leadership will now seriously investigate every avenue to reduce the risk of future flooding in this vulnerable part of the city. Had the Council's offices or property been flooded in this way, I am sure remedial action would have already begun. And this from Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St Giles Hill.
We have denials from Chris Gillam. Sir, I apologise to Christopher Sharrett for thinking he must be ignorant of the physics of climate change. But if not guilty of Trumpian denial of human-caused climate change, his enthusiasm for road building is only explicable by a belief in the new Boris Johnson form of denial. Anthropogenic climate change is real, but imagined technological development absolves us from any need for behavioural change. This more pernicious denial is what allows our MP to support airport and road expansion, and is one with the government's boasting of what Mr. Sharrett calls the country's achievements in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. As previously pointed out, Flick Drummond's claim of world leadership was simply wrong, as is Mr. Sharrett's assertion that, by contrast, Germany has done worse. Consumption emissions are what we are responsible for, not the production emissions that Mr. Sharrett talks about. We are, in fact, in around 12th place in the reduction of consumption emissions since the Kyoto baseline of 1990, a reduction of 31%, and this is identical to the German figure. I also pointed out that the ruling party of government had nothing to boast about in this reduction. The destruction of the coal industry was a political action which had nothing to do with environmental concern, and it was made possible and painless through the unlooked-for bonanza of North Sea oil and gas, a resource Germany did not have. The growth of renewable energy was almost entirely the result of Labour policy. Subsequent Conservative governments having progressively discouraged such growth, new capacity steadily falling over the last 7 years. Cumulative carbon is what matters, and we should be cutting it now, not waiting for something to turn up in the future. Even dismissing growth in energy demand from international aviation, road traffic expansion, maritime shipping, and imported embedded carbon, the average rate of new renewable capacity addition puts net zero carbon achievement at around the year 2052. Too late even for the far too late target set by this government. And Mr. Sharrett mocked the Green Party for suggesting there may be alternatives to this insane path to disaster. And that's from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
From Roger Stevens, Vote and Be Listened To. Sir, our Prime Minister has solved social care and NHS working times by raising national insurance contributions. These services principally serve the older section of the community, a group that, year by year, forms an ever larger proportion of the population. Add the state pension to the mix, and an ever-increasing black hole appears in the national finances. Everybody knows how this hole should be filled. It should be filled by somebody else. The government has decided that working people, rich and poor, and their employers should pay the increase, while pensioners, rich and poor, should pay nothing. There are many ways to fund these services, all with their pros and cons, and those of us who do not have to make the decision will always feel free to criticise. If it does seem unfair, however, that the principal beneficiaries of this extra funding will contribute nothing. Unlike a very large proportion of humanity, we are governed by people we have elected by universal suffrage. Inevitably, therefore, our leaders' views on the best means to levy taxes will be clouded by political considerations. In this case, the calculation is quite clear. Approximately 80% of pensioners vote, while nearly 50% of working-age people hold our democracy so cheap that they can't be bothered to turn up at polling station. Pensioners vote, so they get. Young people don't vote, so they don't get. And that's from Roger Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton.
And this letter from Andrea Owen is entitled New Hospitals. Sir, a couple of weeks ago, I wrote to Mr. Brine to ask him to find out how the government were going to squeeze 40 or 48, depending on your source, brand new hospitals out of a £3.7 billion budget. I haven't received a reply, but your article, Leaked Information, Raises Questions Over New Hospital, in last week's paper, provides the answer. It all lies in the definition of new. Even if it is not new, it will count in the total if the government says so. Yet another much-promoted government promise, which will be kept only in the minds of those who want and need to believe. This is all the more worrying, since it would seem from your article that the government is trying once again to silence those who speak out. Any communication with the press has to be, quote, cleared by the Department of Health and Social Care. In his last letter from Westminster in the Chronicle, August 26th, Mr. Brine argued that it would be better if the government stopped publishing the COVID figures so that we could all just get on with our lives in ignorance of the facts. I think that the example of the new hospitals is the reason why some people would rather know the actual position based on figures from an independent source in order to make a judgment on the way they should lead their lives, rather than relying on government control of the message. As Mr. Kirker wrote in the Chronicle letter September the 2nd on the rushed crime bill, the government's attempt to erode our right to protest needs to be resisted. Sound information is the basis of good judgment. Only authoritarian governments have a need to resort to the suppression of individual expression of a different view and try to deprive the people of the full information on which to base that view. And this from Andrea Owen, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And John Airy writes about baby charge. Sir, so the government is finally instigating a review into the social care budget. About time, especially after they've stolen the homes of thousands of taxpayers over the years to pay for their care at the end of their lives. Well, while I wait the outcome with bated breath, I can tell you there is only one way to solve this problem, and that is with a radical change to the NHS. Remove maternity from the NHS and privatise it. No longer can we afford to pay for something that is not an illness. You want to have a baby in the 21st century? Then you must pay for it. No longer should we have to bear the continued cost of a third or fourth child born into a dysfunctional, unemployed family of couch potatoes. Then maybe, just maybe, people will think before they decide to start a family that they know that we as a society can't afford anymore, and allow the billions of pounds saved to be diverted to the social care budget. And that's from John Airy of Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy, Winchester. Follow that.
This is from James Anderson, Housing Glue Trap. Doesn't compare, really. Sir, the shared ownership home scheme is intended to get people onto the housing ladder sooner than would otherwise be the case. It comes at a price. Shared owners, always leaseholders, are liable for rent, service charges, and the full maintenance bill. The idea of local homes for local people is popular with some. To have shared ownership properties fit in with the schemes. The so-called restricted staircasing leases have been introduced. Under these leases, a shared owner can never buy the whole property. But the scheme is a housing glue trap. When it comes to moving on, a restricted shared owner must find a buyer who is prepared to take on all the liabilities that come with it. The evidence, such as it is, indicates that buyers are rare and restricted shared owners struggle to get back their capital. In a Freedom of Information request, I asked Winchester City Council, WCC, whether they had done any impact assessment, and they have not. I asked for the number of properties for which WCC had insisted on restricted staircasing, and they do not know. While a prospective restricted shared owner will be guided through the legalities, I doubt very much whether the difficulties of selling or the likely loss of capital are properly highlighted. Sadly, most parish councillors appear to be unaware of the trap and enthusiastically include shared ownership in their rural exception schemes. These are not the affordable homes that they claim to be, and the WCC needs to stop burying its collective head here. And that's James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This letter from Mrs. Sims is entitled Upham Plans. Sir, it was nice of David Carter to offer his sympathy last week in your paper, The Chronicle, letters September 9th. But we, as local people living with the City Council decision, would like to hear from the councillors who made this mess. They listened to expensive consultants who bent the reality, and the officer repeated exactly what the applicant's agent told her. Nearly 50 truly local people objected to this application, and three big landowners from far away supported it. You report also that Mrs. Evans, the committee chair, said about the Quab Stables application, quote, "Development should be led by the community. It's the countryside." I wonder where she thinks the community of Lower Ashton and Upham actually are. People like me wonder if it is worth objecting to an application and if the councillors or their officers even bother to read them. The officer's presentation was prejudiced, and there was nothing that we, sitting there at the planning meeting, could say. It was just like being at school. Yes, it is time to have a better system. This from Mrs. Sims, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
And Mrs. L. Black asks us to trust planners. Sir, as a regular reader of the Hampshire Chronicle, I have to say I am getting rather fed up with some of the constant sniping in the letter section, especially when it comes to planning issues. In this country, we have a very thorough and detailed planning system with very capable people working within. I feel they and the committees of elected councillors who are responsible for any controversial planning decisions must be respected a lot more. The system is extremely robust, but not everyone is always going to be happy with the results. That's life. The constant whining when the decisions go against individuals or groups of local activists is undermining the work and experience of people who are far better served to make these decisions. And that's from Mrs. L. Black, Clausentum Road, St. Cross, Winchester.
And this is from Mr. White, Leaving Litter. Sir, hardly a day goes by without comments, quite rightly, in the media about littering in the countryside. Obviously, bottles and wrappings are largely down to the public. But what about the numerous signs and barriers left at the roadside after the roadworks have been completed, perhaps weeks previously? Why do not the local authorities chase these contractors to clear up completely? Although I suppose technically it could actually be down to said local authorities as they agreed a contract for repairs. And that's from Mr. L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And this letter from Julia Robinson, rather sad letter, entitled Dyslexia. Sir, I would like to thank you for printing the obituary for my mother, Jo Hewlett, in the Chronicle of September the 9th, most of which I contributed to. My mother was a wonderful and inspiring woman who will be sadly missed. However, I must take issue with the editing of the piece I sent in. The word stupid appears in the first paragraph and is not a word that neither I or my mother would ever have used to describe someone. Like my mother, I also worked in special educational needs for Hampshire for many years, and the word stupid is not one that any professional in this field would ever use. From Julia Robinson, St Mary's Terrace in Twyford.
And Professor Khalid Aziz, is this that education is safe? Sir, we were surprised to read the letter in last week's Chronicle from Dr. Robert McFarlane and others, as, to our knowledge, we have received no recent communication, either formally or informally, from any of the letter's signatories. For the record, there is no plan to deprive children of the use of our Field Studies Centre. In fact, quite the reverse. We hope to increase our education offering, encompassing older children and adults. This despite a challenging background of declining public funding for such activities. Since its inception, the Field Studies Centre has always been a key part of our commitment to education. Also, since its inception, the building has also had other community, non-educational usage, including the hosting of weddings. It may be that the signatories have been misled by the campaign opposing the redevelopment of the derelict Queen's Hotel site in the centre of Selborne. If the planning application is successful, Gilbert White's house and gardens will greatly benefit from a peppercorn lease for 99 years of the ground floor, part of which will be used as an additional education space, catering for older children and adults. Dr. McFarlane and his colleagues should be reassured that education remains and will continue to be a key pillar of our charitable purpose. We were heartened to read of his continued support for the museum and would be happy to explain our plans in greater detail to him and his colleagues. And that's from Professor Khalid Aziz, LVODLFRSA, Chairman of Trustees, Gilbert White's House and Gardens, Selborne.
And this is from Jill Collymore, and it's about Debenhams. Sir, I agree wholeheartedly with Jane Harding, Chronicle letter September the 9th, that with the present high street shops and cafes and excellent stalls selling attractive pottery and household items, there's no need for the old Debenhams to be used for an indoor market, as has been suggested. The real need there is for a small multi-purpose hall for music, meetings, exhibitions and drama, with a late opening cafe. The position of Debenhams in the town would also ensure that the lower High Street area could be enlivened in the evenings. And this is from Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
Oh, thank you very much, Tony. Now, there's no Your Say or Q&A column this week, but if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, now we'll carry on with I've got a Chronicle comment, then Peter has first person and Tony has Belgarum. So I will start with the editorial comment. Good news over bid to save countryside. A parish council's campaign to preserve open space near Winchester is to be welcomed. There is a little-known swathe of chalk downland at Sir John Moore Barracks that is a wildlife haven. Ironically, its quality is largely the result of the fact it has been under the stewardship of the Ministry of Defence since the Second World War. But now the land at Flowerdown, largely managed by the MOD for its wildlife, is potentially under threat from the redevelopment of the base, which is set to be vacated by the military in 2024. The Defence Infrastructure Organisation is drawing up plans for development, and ideas include housing, a business park, and park and ride. And the open land would be considered by many to be ripe for more intensive uses. With chronic development pressure around Winchester, it is important that areas are protected. Unlike nearby Barton Farm, Flowerdown has never been intensively farmed, greatly boosting its ecological importance. Over the coming decades, Winchester is likely to grow in size, so green lungs such as this need to be cherished.
And an article by, again, Carly Daziz, entitled Passport to Britishness. Wow. 18, gorgeous, educated, A star in maths, charming, articulate, and can play tennis to a level that would give our old codger's weekend tennis club in St Marybourne, three sets and a coronary, a run for its money. What not to like about Emma Raducanu? We all gather together as a family on Saturday evening to watch Emma take the US Open in straight sets, breezing through as she had ever since arriving almost from nowhere as a qualifier. For once, the hype that inevitably followed her tremendous victory seems justified. It's not just the money, although £1.8 million would help any 18-year-old on their way. It's the way in which she comports herself, such grace and confidence, makes a change from the average expectorating professional footballer. Emma appeals to all ages, and if you are to believe the tabloids, we have all taken to our hearts the first female Brit to win a Grand Slam event since Virginia Wade triumphed at Wimbledon in 1977. We are all proud to have Emma as one of us, flying the flag for Britain. But wait, is she one of us? She was born in Toronto. Her father's Romanian, her mother Chinese. She speaks Mandarin and apparently has already addressed the Chinese billions in a TV interview. She arrived in the UK aged 2, but that doesn't take away the fact that she's a first-generation immigrant. Ah! Sorry, that's just the way it's written. But she can play tennis, and we'd love her. Consider now the fate of the thousands of young would-be immigrants camped out in Calais. Home Secretary Priti Patel, also of immigrant stock but born here, has decreed that they should be pushed back as they attempt to cross to the UK in their rubber boats. That's easy for the Home Secretary to say, and far more difficult to put into practice. A couple of months ago, I was privileged to see a demonstration of the Border Force's ability to repel borders. They have sophisticated and very fast boats, mainly RIBS, which I believe stands for Rigid Inflatable Boats. The trouble is, they are governed by something known as SOLAS, stands for Saving Lives at Sea, which was brought into law in 1914, following the sinking of the Titanic. That rightly says that preserving life at sea is the number one priority. UK Border Force RIBS approaching small dinghies can easily override them or capsize them with their wash. They've now purchased jet skis, which are far more manoeuvrable and benign. Only they've balked at calling them jet skis. With typical civil service po-facedness, they've rechristened them tactical watercraft. The TCs can deploy the waterborne equivalent of a stinger, which safely disables the outboard motor of any craft that fails to stop when commanded. But still, they keep coming. Why? Two key questions. Firstly, why don't the immigrants seek asylum in France or other EU countries? Possible answer: the French are seriously beastly to them and generally unwelcoming. Secondly, how come the French aren't more effective at picking up the smugglers as they launch from the beaches of the Pas de Calais? See answer to Q1. Apparently, when approached by a French cutter, the asylum seekers will hold a small child out over the water, remove its life jacket, and threaten to drop said child if the French vessel comes any closer. Mindful of SOLAS, the French boat backs off. A variation. If no small child is immediately to hand, it is for a would-be immigrant to douse himself in petrol and threaten self-immolation. Again, the French back off. One solution would be for the British Border Force to immediately return smugglers' boats to a French port, having first secured the safety of any children and confiscated spare cans of petrol. But that seems to be beyond the wit of the authorities. Of course, if the immigrants could play tennis, things might be different. However, they might be able to pick vegetables or, in time, become HGV drivers.
Oh, well, Bulgarum is concerned about a missing sculpture this week. Tony, tell us more about it.
Yeah, well, it's flying a kite. But there isn't a kite at the Mo. A landmark art sculpture in Winchester city centre is missing a vital part. The kite flyer statue spans Parchment Street, close to the junction with St George's Street. It was erected by the City Council in 2009, as a way of increasing interest from passers-by on the high street to explore the side street, packed as it is with independent shops and businesses. Created by Marzia Colonna, it is a bronze figure of a young man flying a gilded kite while walking across a bridge, which will span the street at a height of nearly 6 metres. At the moment, it is without the kite, and it is unclear how that happened. A council spokesman said, "Winchester City Council is undertaking essential repairs to this sculpture. The material the artwork is made from had become fatigued, and the council hopes to have the piece reinstalled as soon as possible." The bridge on which the flyer stands was made by Metal Art Design Foundry in Denmead, and incorporates two more kites, and playful strings tangle themselves around the steel structure. The sculpture was erected following the City Council's decision in 2004 to reverse the traffic flow in the one-way street, which led to a drop in passing trade.
Well, we've sadly still no historical items or what's on this week, so here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 18th of September, the sun will set at 7:11 p.m. and on Wednesday the 22nd of September, the sun will rise at 6:52 a.m. and will set at 7:02 p.m. The nights are drawing in. So, now on to items of general news. Peter, would you like to kick us off, please?
Thank you, Barbara. And this one is entitled Charity for Fleeing Refugee Families. Donations for Afghan families fleeing their war-torn homes are being coordinated to ensure everyone gets what they need. Hampshire County Council has appointed Community First to lead the refugee effort, working alongside the British Red Cross, the NHS, local councils and charities. The UK aims to settle around 5,000 Afghan nationals, with Hampshire saying it will take up to 22 families. A further seven have also moved into the Portsmouth area since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan. Community First has set up collection sites across the county and has received so much support that donations have been temporarily halted. CEO Tim Houghton said, "Since being tasked by the County Council to manage the collection and distribution of donated items in support of those Afghan families arriving in Hampshire, we have seen such immense community spirit and generosity. We have been overwhelmed with the warm welcome and offers of support that have been received for the evacuated families, and we are extremely proud to be at the hub of the Hampshire community coordinating our region's collective operations." Up and down the county, local communities are coming together to do what they can to try and make the lives of families that have found themselves in a very difficult situation slightly more bearable. I would like to take the time to say how truly grateful my organisation and I are for all the help we have received over the last 2 weeks. Evacuees are currently in temporary accommodation and have already received initial donations of clothing and toiletries. Permanent accommodation is on the horizon, and at that stage, the charity will let people know what other items are needed.
And staying with Afghan families are relocated in county. Around 50 Afghan families fleeing the Taliban have been relocated to Hampshire, and more are on the way. To date, Hampshire County Council has come to the aid of around 50 refugee families as part of the government's Afghan resettlement scheme. The council had initially agreed to take up to 22 families, consisting of guides and translators who have supported UK troops for the past 2 decades, but reviewed its position when the Taliban took control of Afghanistan. A spokesman for the county council said, "The county council and local partners, including district and borough councils, NHS, support providers and local charities, are committed to continuing support for Afghan families arriving in Hampshire as part of the government's resettlement scheme. At present, some 50 families are being collectively supported in temporary accommodation pending national decisions being taken on their long-term future and relocation. Over the next few days, we are preparing to welcome more evacuees, but the numbers are unknown at present." City Council leader, Councillor Gerald Vernon Jackson, said old Ministry of Defence accommodation is being used to house these families so that housing waiting lists are not affected. The County Council spokesman added, "The public response from the people of Hampshire to the plight of the evacuees has been extraordinary. Registered Hampshire charity, Community First, which is coordinating donations across the county, working alongside more than 30 local community organisations, has welcomed a huge number of donations and offers of support. Work is now ongoing to collect and distribute much-needed items to Afghan families who have expressed their gratitude for the public's support. Anyone who wants to donate unwanted items can go to the Community First website.
Food and Flowers at Garden Society Show. A Winchester Garden Society annual show took place earlier this month with two local restaurant owners judging the cookery section. The St. Cross Garden Society, which is twinned with Stanmore Gardening Club, hosted restaurant owners Mark Dodd and Damien Brown, who shared their expertise from the Chesil Rectory and in the park to judge the cookery competition for the first time. The event on September the 4th at St. Faith's Parish Hall saw displays of flowers, vegetables, craft items and cookery, including jams, cakes, chutney and sourdough. Jill Wormsley created a display of the edible playground, which she has been instrumental in founding at Oliver's Battery Primary School. She was helped by Ruth Farley, a professional gardener who leads the edible playground work, most recently at Oliver's Battery Primary School and Nursery. Established in February 2021, the playground garden is already producing vegetables, and they were prize winners in some of the classes in the show. Prolific entries from Myrtle Cunningham and Annie Miller created stiff competition for the silverware, with Myrtle just pipping Annie to the post for the coveted Alan Broderick Challenge Cup for the most points in the show. Stanmore Gardening Club hosts monthly talks at the Community Centre in Somers Close, beside the Carroll Youth Centre. For more information and to be added to the mailing list, contact Pip Billington via her email address, pip.billington, all lowercase, 23@gmail.com.
Dedication of memorial to Spitfire pilots. A three-year project by Alsford Historical and Literary Society to create a memorial to three Spitfire pilots killed over Abbotstone has come to fruition. On July the 22nd, 1944, six pilots of the 26th Squadron RAF were practicing pair formation from flying and deflection sighting. Flight Lieutenants Lees, GM, and Adams formed one pair, Flight Sergeant Hughes and Flight Lieutenant Hartley another. A collision killed Adams, Lees, and Hartley. Hughes was exonerated in the following inquiry. It was felt wrong that there was no memorial to the event that took the lives of three young men. So with permission of the Grange estate, a site was chosen, from which all three crash sites can be seen at the junction of the Oxdrove Way and the Itchinstoke Abbotstone Road. After many delays, but with the help of the Grange estate, Hampshire County Council, Winchester City Council, Itchinstoke and Ovington Parish Council, Award Resins Limited and individuals, at last a fitting monument has been created. Visitors can now read the story and hear an eyewitness account via a QR code. Last Thursday, a dedication ceremony was held with RAFA Chaplain Peter Colquhoun officiating and about 30 people attending. Eyewitness Stan Upton recalled the event he witnessed as a boy. Glenn Gilbertson, chairman of Alsford Historical and Literary Society, presented a fragment of one of the Spitfires recently found by Jamie Sanderson to Roy Gentry for display in the Alsford Museum. And an honour party from the catering training squadron at Worthy Down sounded the last post.
Winchester Cathedral Festival of Flowers. Fascinating floral displays as petals engulf cathedral. A city flower show set to launch with the theme of reflection and triggered memories in the garden. The Winchester Cathedral Festival of Flowers is bringing resonance along with thousands of flowers. Pip Bensley, Festival of Flowers creative director, said, "This has been a two-year process, the oddest preparation I've ever done. Because of the pandemic, we couldn't meet. It's been so uncertain. We only found out in June that we had the go-ahead." The five-day festival launched yesterday at 6:30 p.m. and visitors will see an interactive event created by more than 400 volunteers and designers. Visitors will be asked to place a Montbretia whilst walking through the cathedral to allow the public to be part of the festival. Designer Debbie Wodge and the team from the Hamble Lerice Flower Club have designed a sound display accompanied by a floral arrangement where whispered voices of the pandemic will be played. This year's team of artists have faced new challenges as designers have moved to an environmentally friendly production by swapping floral foam for agrowool under a new sponsorship. Janet Vivash of the Lymington Floral Club explained how husbands of the club had become involved in the process to help sheets of birch to the base of their display and how they needed to find a way to use copper tubing to hold the wood to replace the foam. Ms. Bensley said, "When we talked about it, normally we use vast amounts of foam, which is not good, but we said we'd try. We've had to be creative, use more traditional things like wires. We have been sponsored. It may be slightly more expensive, but things can be reused now. We've been relearning old techniques through workshops and books. This is the first big festival to do it. I hope there's no more foam ever." At the show, you can see various ways displays have been created using recycled or reusable items, from shoes bought in charity shops to books commemorating author Jane Austen. In addition to the usual times to visit the show, the cathedral has committed to being inclusive for all needs, and mornings will be available for those with sensory needs and sessions for blue light members in the evenings. The Dean of Winchester, Reverend Catherine Ogle, said, "We wanted to make the cathedral as open as possible to as wide a range of people as possible. This is the first really big event here since COVID. Yesterday was extraordinary. A little army of volunteers came from across the country, descended on the cathedral. They'd been preparing for months. It was such a buzz. There's such a contrast. I love the brightly coloured ones. So bright and reflective, it takes you to a different emotion. We've really learned over the last 18 months the significance of nature. And there's a picture to go with this." Well, of course there is. It's the ladies from St. Martin's Flower Club in Jersey standing around some of their creations, which are lovely tall lilac-y purple and white flowers, all supported quite tall on what I think must be copper or wire tubes. And they look very, very pleased with themselves, and so they should.
A warming arts charity. The founder of a Winchester charity which gives people with disabilities the opportunity to perform on stage recently received a special award. Jane Jessop, who founded Blue Apple in 2005, was awarded the Badge of the Order of Mercy for Distinguished Voluntary Service by the League of Mercy Foundation. Recently, Jane's son Tommy has starred as Terry Boyle in Line of Duty and was on stage with other cast members at the National Television Awards to collect the award for returning drama, much to the delight of the viewers. Jane's award was presented in a ceremony at Mansion House, a Grade 1 listed building in London, which is the official residence of the Lord Mayor of London. Jane originally founded Blue Apple to help facilitate Tommy in pursuing his love of acting, as the nearest theatre company for people with learning difficulties was then in London. She decided to set up an ambitious and inclusive theatre company for people with learning difficulties in Winchester, where every member was equally valued. After receiving her award, Jane said, "The event provided a valuable opportunity to speak to very interesting people and hear their stories and share why the vision of Blue Apple is so important to us all and how lives have been changed. Today, Blue Apple brings highly acclaimed theatrical performances to the south of England and overseas."
Charity celebrates 10th anniversary. The Friends of St Cross Hospital charity recently celebrated their 10th anniversary with a tea party. The event marked the founding of the Friends of St Cross Hospital charity in September 2011, which currently has around 700 members who have all helped raise in excess of £140,000. The annual summer party had to be cancelled over the last 2 years, which seriously limited the charity's income. But a full programme of activities, including lectures and outings, have been prepared going forward for the remainder of 2021 and all through 2022. Over 100 members and guests assembled at St Cross to reflect on the many successful activities undertaken and the nearly 20 hospital projects which have benefited from financial support of the Friends. The hospital is now open for visitors once again, and the 100 Men's Hall Tea Room serves cakes and drinks until the end of October.
And one of those activities at St Cross is the St Michaelmas St Cross Fair. The Winchester Fair is returning with a wide range of stalls and activities. The Michaelmas Fair, hosted by the Hospital of St Cross, is on September the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The Madding Crowd, who perform church and secular music from as early as the 17th century, will be in attendance, as well as Falcon High Birds of Prey and the Austin Healy Car Club. Stalls include garden stalls, bric-a-brac, homemade crafts, bespoke jewellery, food and drink stalls, craft cards, paintings and children's books and toys. Entry is £3, with under 16s free, and, most importantly, free parking is available.
Key agreement over proposed surgery. Construction of a GP surgery in Winchester will start next year. The City Council has exchanged contracts for a 150-year lease for the Upper Brook Street GP surgery car park site. This is ahead of the planned relocation of nearby St Clement's Surgery, which serves around 15,000 people. Construction is expected to start on the site in 2022. The new site's designs will be overhauled to better cater for modern primary care, including increased digital uptake of services and pandemic resilience. GP partner at St Clement's, Dr. Susie Burns, said, "We're extremely excited about our new development. Our patients and staff deserve a modern practice equipped to meet the needs of our city centre population. The new building will provide us with well-designed spaces for face-to-face consultations and better accessibility for those with disabilities, dementia, young children, and extra needs." Since February 2020, the City Council has worked with St Clement's and West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, to deliver a building to meet the needs of local residents. Planning permission for the scheme was granted in 2016, and minor amendments are now being planned to ensure the layout is future-proofed and adapted to ensure the latest advancements clinical care can be accommodated. Assura and the CCG have also jointly commissioned a study to assess the increased digital-first focus of GPs on patients' outcomes. Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lernsey, added, "We are delighted that the development of the Upper Brook Street GP surgery has moved to the next stage. The new building will help provide better medical care in the heart of Winchester. On October the 13th, St Clements and Assura will hold a public drop-in event at the Guildhall. Clinical Director at North and Midhants CCG, Dr Charlotte Hutchings, said, "This is a priority project and we are pleased to support it and benefit patients locally."
This article asks the following tongue-twisting question. Eateries set for ex-next shop. Winchester City Council has received a fresh planning application regarding two new shops on the High Street. According to the proposal details, the new units on the former Next site could be transformed into a new cafe or restaurant, as well as a gym, in place of the boarded up units which had been empty for some time. The application by Adam Stone on behalf of Nuveen Real Estate Management is initially for a new shop front at numbers 9 to 11 High Street. The names of the potential tenants is not known, with the landlord's agents getting interest from companies in hospitality and indoor sports.
Event near city crowns fittest army soldiers. The army's fittest soldiers have been crowned after fighting off competition from hundreds of colleagues in a year-long contest. A total of 670 male and female soldiers entered the British Army Warrior Fitness competition, which was launched during the pandemic. The entrants initially sent in videos of them completing exercise tasks, and the top 10 of both genders were invited to take part in the finals at Sir John Moore Barracks near Winchester. The tests included a 300-metre swim and 1-mile run, followed by weightlifting, a barbell cycle and burpee workout, and a version of the annual fitness test. The winners were Staff Sergeant Alex Rees, 34, and Staff Sergeant Charlotte Spence, 34, who both work at the Army School of Physical Training at Aldershot. Staff Sergeant Rees told the PA News Agency, "The competition was fierce. Different people brought different attributes to each of the events. I think the level speaks volumes about the fitness of the British Army. We are doing things that are potentially beyond the normal capability for deployment for a unit, but it gives people something to aim for." Staff Sergeant Spence said, "It was hard and a really intense day, but I have enjoyed every workout. We have a lot of very fit individuals in the Army, and it's great that we are embracing this type of sporting activity with so many people involved." Warrant Officer Chris Armstrong of the Royal Army Physical Training Corps said, "Elite level athletes are role models. We have athletes from all over the British Army, so if people see someone from their unit competing, they aspire to be them, which makes them want to be fitter, which makes my job as a physical training instructor easier. Being part of the Royal Army Physical Training Corps, it's my number one priority to have the fittest soldiers we possibly can. We are in contingency now. We don't understand what the battlefield will look like, so we need to be as fit as we possibly can." And there's a photo with the article, and it shows a young man, a young soldier, leaning backwards, hauling two extremely heavy-looking bags of something or other that's designed, obviously, to show his strength and resilience.
Action on rogue mobile home parks. Winchester Civic Chiefs are hoping new government laws will help them clamp down on rogue operators of caravan parks. New legislation means that operators of mobile home sites must pass a fit and proper person requirement. A council meeting heard officers say they have a good relationship with most site operators, but a senior councillor raised concerns about the way some of the 14 sites in the district are managed. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group on the council, said, "My experience of some of the sites is not quite as rosy as your report suggests. My experience of residents not being sufficiently satisfied with the management of the site. They struggle for maintenance to be actively actioned. Lighting and fire safety work they feel should be required is not done." Councillor Kelsey Lurney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, speaking at her decision day, said, "I share Councillor Horrell's concern about the residents of mobile homes. With over 500 in the district providing an important service of affordable accommodation, but with owners and managers controlling so many aspects of service provision, it is open to abuse." Councillor Lurney agreed to adopt the private sector housing caravan site licensing policy.
This article concentrates on the latest COVID information entitled COVID Hotspots. COVID is currently declining across the Winchester district, although a couple of hotspots have emerged this week. In the 7 days to Thursday, September the 9th, there have been 322 cases across the district, down 66 on the previous 7 days, a fall of 17%, the lowest number since the start of the month. The cases are rising in both Stanmore, 24, up 8, and Oliver's Battery and Hursley. Across the district, cases are falling in 9 areas and increasing in 5. The number of COVID patients in Hampshire Hospitals Trust is stable at 30, with 19 in Basingstoke and 11 at the RHCH in Winchester.
Pianos as college nears music ambition. A sixth form college in Winchester has received 5 new pianos. Peter Simmons took a delivery of a brand new Steinway Model B grand piano and 4 upright pianos as part of the college's ambition to become an all Steinway school. This means the college is eligible to join the Steinway initiative, and if this is achieved, Peter Simmons will be the first state school in the country to become an all Steinway school. The college has purchased the new pianos to replace some of the older instruments in the music department, following in a donation from the Mercer's company. The new pianos were unveiled at a concert featuring music students Zosia F. Pillsworth, Hannah Shermerly, Archie McMorran and Archie Thornton, who played pieces accompanied by head of keyboard, Dr. Samantha Carrasco. Dr. Carrasco said, "The new Steinway pianos will be a fantastic addition to the music department, offering even more musical and performance opportunities for our talented students, whilst upgrading our practice facilities. We are really excited to be joining the Steinway initiative, and the new pianos will make an enormous difference for the students." The arrival of the 5 pianos was marked by a world premiere and recording of a piece entitled Lockdown Reflections by student Archie McMorran, who is going to study composition at Trinity Laban next year, a music and dance conservatoire in London. And there's a lovely picture of Dr. Carrasco and the 4 students involved, all smartly dressed in evening dress, standing by the new Steinway Grand, which looks really rather impressive.
Closure of City Bar and Cafe. 2 popular eateries in Winchester's city centre have closed their doors for good. slug and lettuce in the square and eat, drink and be in the high street are the latest businesses to permanently shut. The reasons why are currently unclear. Last weekend, the slug and lettuce's last was the last, according to a sign in the window. A sign in the window of Eat, Drink and Be says, "After 6 years, we are sorry to say we have served our last customers. A big thank you for all your support and custom." The Chronicle has contacted both businesses and awaits a response.
And this is entitled Mayor's Charity. Last month, Youth Options became one of three charities to benefit from the Mayor of Winchester charity donations. Just months after Councillor Patrick Cunningham began his tenure, COVID-19 hit, changing the way the Mayor could support his chosen charities. But despite the challenges caused by the pandemic, the Mayor's office have now presented Youth Options with a cheque for £2,478 to support children and young people across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The new Mayor, Councillor Vivian Archwell, held a reception at Winchester College to celebrate Councillor Cunningham's retirement and present the cheques to the charities involved. Councillor Cunningham's chosen charities were Youth Options, Home Start Winchester District and the Winchester Young Carers.
Memorial Service. A memorial service will be held in Winchester for Lord Ashburton, who died last October, aged 91. It will be a service of thanksgiving for the life of John Baring, Lord Ashburton, who lived at Northington and owned the Grange estate. He established the Opera Festival at Northington Grange in the late 1990s. The pandemic had delayed the service for several months, and it will start at 12 noon on Friday, October the 15th. All are welcome. And although it says it was in Winchester, it doesn't exactly say where. Possibly the cathedral. Maybe somewhere else.
Vera becomes a centenarian. A woman who's lived in Winchester all her life celebrated her 100th birthday last weekend. Vera Hall celebrated her 100th birthday on September the 12th at Brendan Care Park Road with a customary telegram from the Queen. Vera's son, Richard Hall, paid tribute to his mother and her family's long-standing connection to Winchester area. He said, "Vera has lived in Hyde for most of her life, as had her mother and father, Ethel and Richard, Jack. Vera worked for many years at Gordon's Timber Yard in Gordon Road, meeting her future husband, Edward, there, just after the Second World War. The couple married in 1947 and have two sons, Christopher and me. With her mobility reducing over the years, Vera moved into care during January 2020. Thanks go to the Brendan staff who made Vera's big day so very special. On her birthday, Vera said, 'If someone had told me in years gone by that I would reach 100, I would have thought they were joking.' It's a lovely card from the Queen, and doesn't she look young?"
And this short little article is entitled Cafe of the Year. The winner of the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser Cafe of the Year competition has been decided by readers. Dish Deli Kitchen in Latimer Street, Romsey, saw the most votes. Thank you to everyone who nominated and voted in the contest.
Half Marathon. Winchester's biggest sporting event is set to return this Sunday. Runners will pound the pavements as the annual half marathon takes them from the Broadway out to Hursley and back into the city via Sarum Road. The 13.1-mile run has again been organised by Rees Leisure, which also runs the Southampton Marathon.
Samaritan Street Collection. The Winchester branch of the Samaritans took to the High Street to collect donations on Saturday. Volunteers from the Winchester and District Branch of Samaritans raised £620 on September the 11th from coins in buckets, contactless donations and text donations. To make a donation to support the local branch, text LISTEN, all capitals, 2, figure 2, capital U, to 70085 to donate £5. Anyone struggling to cope, Samaritans can be contacted by phone 116 123 and email lowercase joe at samaritans.org 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Thank you, Tony. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. And thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Anne Brew, Jane Thomas and Sue Frain, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Peter Walker.
Goodbye.
And Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and take care.